You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Dr. Melody Fox right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and with me is co-host extraordinaire, Dr. Melody Fox.
Well, hi, Alan. Good to see you again this week.
Well, I'm glad to be here, and I'm glad that we are doing this subject. In fact, in a few years, I may be in this position.
That's right. You've got some teenage boys.
Exactly. And so what we're going to be talking about is the empty nest syndrome. So, Melody, tell me, is this something that you end up dealing with in your practice?
Actually, I have quite a few women that are trying to adjust to being a mom without kids in the house anymore. They're off to college, or they're gone off on their own, or sometimes they come back to the nest and they're trying to figure out how to get them back out. So, you know, our subject today is great. The woman we're going to be talking to in just a moment, Christy Mellor, wrote this wonderful book, and it's kind of tongue-in-cheek but a lot of fun, called Fun Without Dick and Jane, Your Guide to Delightful Empty Nest. So, I mean, I know we're both looking forward to it. We both enjoyed the book quite a bit. And now Christy Mellor has become, well, she became a cheerleader for the other kind of parenthood, the anti-perfection, you deserve a life kind. And her first book was called The Three Martini Playdate. And that kind of created a new trend for today's beleaguered parents, helping them to withstand the pressure to raise perfect, highly enriched offspring. And she continues with this whole thread of ideas through the Three Martini Family Vacation. And now it's Fun with Dick and Jane, or Fun Without Dick and Jane, Your Guide to Delightfully Empty Nest.
Well, and I thought it was interesting, and Christy refers to some of her stuff as rants. So we did some checking, and Christy's rants have been published in Great Britain and Australia, in The Guardian, in Junior Magazine, The Sunday Express, The Sunday Life Magazine. She's been heard on Britain's BBC Radio and American Public Radio's Marketplace, in addition to being reviewed and interviewed in Newsweek, Playboy, The New York Times, People, and many other publications.
Oh, it's wonderful.
Christy, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Well, we're both excited to have you here, too. I mean, this is a really fun book. I really enjoyed it, and you had a lot of excerpts in here on tidbits for the child that went out. I forgot what you called it, but words of wisdom, or pearl of wisdom. That's what it was.
Pearls of wisdom. Yes, little tips for, you know, that you can think of if you need to talk to your kid about things like, you know, drinking. And as you said, I mean, a lot of the book is meant to have a humorous tone and tongue-in-cheek, but it is, you know, I consider it very serious advice, because I think the way to, you know, sometimes reach people is through humor, and it sort of works better often than just lecturing.
Well, what inspired you to do this book? I mean, do you have that empty nest? It certainly sounds like you do in the book.
I have sort of one foot in and one foot out of the empty nest. I still have a high schooler at home, and I have my oldest son just finished his second year of college. But it sort of started when I was at college night with my oldest son, and there was one of the mothers there saying, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do when my son leaves for college. And I was sort of about to say, I can think of about 500 things. And, you know, I think part of what I dealt with in the Three Martini Playdate and what I deal with here is that I would hope that you have already started having a life while your kids are still at home, mm-hmm. and not just spent every, you know, moment supervising and micromanaging their lives. But if you haven't, now is the time to start.
Yeah, and I think one of the things when you say as far as micromanaging their lives, I think that the teenagers are doing a little bit of it for us, because what I found anyway is, I mean, as they're getting closer to leaving, they don't really want us in their life as much.
Well, that's the hope, but, you know, I think a lot of parents really, you know, this trend in parenting has, I think, gotten kind of worse in a way since I wrote my first book, The Three Martini Playdate, which addressed that whole, you know, what now they're calling helicopter parenting. Mm-hmm. And parents are, you know, their kids are going off to college, and the kids have been used to having their parents do everything for them. And now the parents are, in some cases, you know, buying apartments near campus and intervening when the kids don't get the grades they want, and they're talking to the professors. And we're talking about, you know, college-age kids. This is should be a time when they finally get to flex their independent muscles, you know? Mm-hmm.
So how do you think we're dealing with our children when they're leaving the nest?
Well, I mean, I think that the unfortunate trend is that we're still dealing with them too much. I think we need to let them go. And I think, the part of, you know, if you haven't already given them tools to be independent people, you know, that's something that you, one hopes, I would hope that you have started that already when they're in elementary school, preferably. But, you know, get them so that they, by the time they're leaving home, you know, I think it's there's this thing about what we mentioned when you were introducing me, the empty nest syndrome. And I think empty nest syndrome is sort of one more way of I do understand people are dealing with this transition, and it's difficult for many of them. But I think by using words, you know, like grief and mourning and loss and, you know, syndrome, suddenly it becomes this sort of negative thing. And I think that it's something that we should be celebrating, you know, that we have successfully launched our children, and we have now this whole new chapter in our lives.
Mm-hmm. I think that's where a lot of people get stuck, is they have this new chapter, but they don't know what to do with it. They don't even know where to start the first sentence of that chapter.
Yes. Well, and so that's where my book comes in. Maybe I can, you know, light a little fire under people and to hopefully have them realize that it's really an exciting, wonderful time, and the possibilities are endless.
Yeah, and I think for many of us that we're taught that the main thing that we can do for our children is to make them grounded human beings, but at the same time give them wings. And when they get those wings, it's time for them to go, not for us to try to hold them back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think, you know, parents should realize that you're not doing your kids any favors by continuing to do everything for them, because, you know, failure is a wonderful part of life, and that's how we sort of go on and move on in our lives, and kids need to learn that at some point, and the sooner the better, because, you know, they're going to have to deal with life on their own. So, and it's a wonderful thing. I mean, people have said, you know, oh, you miss your son, and, you know, he's off at college, and how do you deal with this? And all I can say is, you know, he's so happy. He loves it. Mm-hmm. What am I going to do? Sit by the phone and weep and wait for him to call? I mean, honestly, how could I possibly be sad about him loving college and loving being away from home? And he's becoming really independent, and it's a great thing.
Mm-hmm. It just had me thinking about the parents that do sit by the phone. And those poor kids are feeling like they have to call the parent. They have to stay in touch because poor mom can't deal with them being away, and that's putting an awful lot of burden on these adults who are supposed to be lifting their wings and flying away. And it's almost...
Well, yeah, and I think, you know, to have your happiness be dependent on anyone, you know, especially your children, mm-hmm. but, you know, I think that's putting an awful lot of pressure on them, certainly. I wouldn't want to have a relationship like that with my kids. I want them to want to come back. And you know, we have a very close family, and we like hanging out together, and we play music together, and we do a lot of things. But, you know, I don't have sort of an enforced, you know, they must be here for Sunday dinner when they, you know, I love that he's back for the summer. He has a summer internship, my oldest son, and he's doing some math tutoring, and, you know, but he has his own life, and he's expected to do more around the house since he's visiting, you know, He has to pick up his socks and, you know, all that.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I was thinking about it sounds like you have a really healthy balance for yourself, and the book hopefully will help other parents to find that within them as well. But I know in your chapter you talk about the care package. If I don't send one, does that mean I don't care? And I remember when I was first out on my own, I used to get care packages, not necessarily for my mom, but for my grandmother. And
aww.
I thought those are the best things in the world, because it reminded me, oh, yeah, she remembers me back in California, whatever. So it was really a nice thing. What are your thoughts on it? I know you wrote a whole little
bit
about it.
I think that's incredibly sweet that you got care packages from your grandmother. And, in fact, you know, I'm not slamming care packages. What I don't like is the industry that has cropped up around, you know, again, it's part of this whole parenting perfection industry, and it's sort of the implication is, you know, you have to send this care package to show your kid that you care, and you're not sending your own. You're signing up for this, you know, thing. Basically, they're getting, you know, boxes of candy on, you know, during finals week, so you know you can show that you care. And I sort of feel like, I don't know, send a care package, but have it be a personal thing, and don't feel like you're being a bad parent if you're not signing up for the, you know, the college sanctioned care packages.
Yeah, I didn't even know they made those care packages, but it doesn't surprise me with today's marketing and trying to find that niche business or what have you. And it does, I don't think it really shows that you really care either, because you're not taking the personal time to go find those individual items or those family pictures or an article or a favorite book or a favorite piece of clothing they left behind they might enjoy that you might send along.
Exactly. And, you know, getting a box full of Doritos would not have meant anything. But when I was away at college, my dad would, you know, cut out articles and send them to me, and, you know, nice long handwritten letters. You know, I still have those letters. You know, it's like, it does show that they care and that they're thinking about me.
And Christy, why don't you share with us some stories that you've encountered from some of the people who just couldn't let go quite so easily.
Well, yeah, as I mentioned in my book, I started hearing these stories when I was writing it. And, you know, the first one I heard was, this one actually came about before I even thought of writing the book. A friend of a friend of mine who's, you know, her daughter was going off to Boston to school, and she was starting to look for apartments near the dorm. And I said, really? Why? I mean, and now it's happening all the time. I keep hearing from parents, well, we're looking at investment property, you know, near that. And I just think, you know, can't you just let your kid go off to college and find your investment property somewhere else? Because it just seems really smothery to me. That's one. And the other, the shocking one I heard was the one of the editors at the publishing company, Chronicle Books, said, oh, yeah, a friend of mine has her son on her GPS, and she tracks him at his campus when he's off of college. And I said, does her son know this? Does he know he's being tracked? And she said, oh, yeah. And I said, oh, well, see, I think that's sort of sad, because, first of all, if I was the kid, I'd be passing my phone off to, you know, whoever's going to be spending 3 hours in the library while I went off and had fun. But I just feel like there's a lack of trust there, or some sort of, you know, I understand if your kid is 14 and is taking the bus across town to, you know, go to his lesson or something. But if your child is away at college, I think it's time to, you know, use that GPS for something a little less obsessive, like maybe going off on a hike or, mm-hmm. you know, doing something yourself.
Yeah, it just seems so intrusive, because we're trying to teach these kids to be independent, successful adults, and they're going to make mistakes. They're going to make decisions or go down one road they probably shouldn't, but hopefully they'll turn around and come back and decide to do something else.
Yeah.
Well,
and I really think the parents have been so overprotective of their kids. You know, oftentimes these kids go off to college and they just go crazy with alcohol or whatever it is, because, you know, everything has been so supervised. And so I think, you know, it's a really good idea, as I said, to, you know, if you can, start it early enough, start giving your kids those tools to be independent, you know, so they know how to navigate around a town, around a city or a town, you know, so they know how to have a reasonable conversation with the grown-up, you know. And a lot of kids, you know, it's sort of like their parents do everything for them, including speaking for them. A lot of teenagers we know don't know how to have a conversation mm-hmm. with an adult. It's kind of odd.
Yeah, you know, and thinking about those parents that are doing all these things, it's like, how do parents make the break? How do they, what would you think they need to do, like in a nutshell, to survive when their child leaves home without trying to micromanage them?
Well, I mean, if you can think about your alternate life. I have a suggestion in my book of which I called sort of a creepy exercise, but I got this from a woman who rowed a boat across the Atlantic Ocean. And one thing she did before she did that was she wrote her own obituary just as an exercise. And you know, one version of her obituary was, you know, how she was living her life and as if she was going to die tomorrow, and this is what happened. And the other version of her obituary was putting in all the things she wanted to do mm-hmm. and that she'd accomplished. And that, you know, gave her the incentive to go row a boat across the ocean. And, you know, not to say that we all need to do that, but, you know, you can sit by the phone waiting for your kid to call and, you know, put together scrapbooks of his, you know, years at Little League. But, you know, or you could go back to college yourself, or preferably not your child's
not,
college.
I was going to say, not the same college they're going to.
Yeah, right. But, you know, you could plan a trip. Sometimes planning the trip is actually as much fun, if not more fun, than actually taking the trip. You could take up a musical instrument. You could, you know, start having grown-up parties. You can eat food that, you know, maybe you haven't been eating because you're planning every meal around your kids, you know. And you can go places where you might not go because you're not planning every vacation around your kids. So, I mean, the possibilities are absolutely endless. And I think it's a matter of, you know, taking the time to rediscover who you are, or to reinvent yourself if you can't figure out who you are, you know, figure out who you want to be.
Yeah, I find that a lot of the women that come in that are in these situations, and a couple men too, are just trying to figure out who they are as a man or a woman with an adult child that's off on their own, because they're always daddy or they're always mommy, and now what's their identity? Who are they?
Yeah.
Because they kind of...
Yeah, and I think... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say that it seems like as soon as they had children, all the things that they had planned to do for themselves got set aside, like their own bucket list. So I think it's almost time for them to figure out what was on your bucket list before you had the children, and is there anything on there that you still want to do, and to go do it?
Absolutely. And sometimes it's not even a matter of doing stuff, because in some cases people are, you know, driven to do so many things, or they've been doing so many things for their kids. You know, if you don't want to circumnavigate the world, then that's fine too. If you want to just putter around the garden and, you know, learn how to cook a few recipes and, you know, basically do things for yourself, I think is, you know, one of my messages. I think something that you should have been doing all along with children, because I think it's healthy for children to see that their parents have a life outside of them. Mm-hmm. But if you haven't done that, then yes, you definitely start thinking about who you are and what you want.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, to rediscover who it is that you were beforehand, I know that having been a room parent with my boys, what I realized was that as parents, we didn't even refer to each other by our first name. We referred to, you know, that they would talk to me as Blaze's dad, and I would refer to them as, you know, Kathy's mom. You know, and you find that within the school that you really have lost your own identity. Your identity is tied to whichever child's class you're in at that time. So I think you bring up a great point. You know, rediscover who you were prior to this, and do the things that you want to do or that you wanted to do.
Mm-hmm. Well,
yes, absolutely. And also, I was just going to add to that, sometimes we've also, you know, friends have fallen by the wayside that we, you know, good friends of ours who, you know, in a lot of cases, I think couples with kids tend to gravitate towards other couples with kids, or sometimes they're friends with couples just because the kids are friends. And I think, you know, you can lose some valuable friendships. We have single friends. We have couples we know who don't have kids. It's a really important thing to have a big variety of friends in your life. So it's sometimes a good time to maybe reacquaint yourself with friends you might have lost.
Yeah. I was thinking when the kids leave and all of a sudden you have all this space in your house, I was wondering your opinion on how important or not important would it be to change that child's room so it becomes your room instead of their old room?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think a lot of times parents sort of have this shrine to their children, and I don't know whether it's in hopes that their kids will come back to stay, or they just want to keep it exactly the same so when the kids come back from vacations, I mean, they will come back from vacations, and that's why this whole empty nest thing is funny. Unless they're really, you know, 6,000 miles away, they will be back for a lot of vacations. But I think, yes, absolutely, this is your house or your apartment or your whatever, you know, maybe you think of downsizing. I wouldn't let the fact that, you know, yes, you have a child, you want them to feel as if they're welcome, but, you know, it's also, you know, it's your house, I think, and, you know, you can do what you want with it, I would think. And I think, you know, turn that room into a guest room or a a meditation room or a yoga retreat or a, you know, crafts room, and, you know, still make it habitable for when your child comes back for those summer vacations. But, yeah, I think time to put the stuff in the box and take the dinosaur pictures off the walls and, the, you know, whatever you've been hanging on to.
Yeah, in a long...
it's a good physical way to kind of, you know, kind of reinvent the space as well, you know, and which I think is a good thing to do psychologically. So.
Yeah, and I think along with that, as you're kind of reinventing the room and figuring out who you are, is you're kind of all of a sudden, now it's not your child's father you're sitting across the table with, now it's your husband, and trying to get to know him on a different level when he's not busy being pestered by the kids going, Daddy, can you give me some money? Daddy, can you take me here? Mommy, can you take me there? So you have more time alone without all those distractions. And I know in your book, I forgot the name of the chapter, but it was a lot of fun to read about, you know, getting to know your spouse again, basically, in all kinds of ways.
Yeah, and I think it can be scary for some couples who really have, you know, their relationship has been consumed by the children for the last 18 years. And in some cases, I think couples, you know, use that as a way to maybe not, you know, it's easier to not connect, because sometimes having a relationship can be hard and, you know, you have to communicate and all that. So, yes, it's a really great time to kind of figure out whether you still have anything in common with your significant other. And if you, you know, if one of you is like looking forward to sitting in front of the television and relaxing for the rest of his or her life, and you want to go travel around the world, you know, good time to get those things sorted out and figure out if you're all on the same page and you know, get to know each other again. Sometimes you've changed, you know, he or she has changed. It's time to maybe rediscover who you both are as a couple, you know, as well as who you are individually.
Yeah, I think that's really important, because people get so disconnected, and they've done studies where it shows even though it's joyful to have children, that is the hardest time in a marriage, is when you have children, because the focus is not on each other as a couple anymore, it goes to the child. So I do think a lot of couples do go separate paths, or they do not connect in a lot of ways they did prior to the children. So now they have to learn to reconnect again.
Yes, yeah. And yes, I agree.
Yes. Oh, I guess I'm looking at the clock right now. We've got to take a quick commercial, but today we are talking to the wonderful author of the wonderful book called Fun Without Dick and Jane, Your Guide to Delightfully Empty Nest. Our author is Christy Mellor, and we are going to be back with more of her and more questions and answers on how to survive this coming up in just a moment with Answers for the Family.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
And we're back for more Answers to the Family. I'm your co-host, Dr. Melody Fox, along with Alan Cardoza, and we are talking today to the author of Fun Without Dick and Jane, Your Guide to the Delightfully Empty Nest, and that is Christy Mellor. And thank you for holding on for the commercial break, Christine. And I was just reviewing the book again. I just love some of the titles of your chapters, especially like Sayonara, Mrs. Minivan. It's like, now's the time to go get that little convertible, that little coupe, right?
Yeah, and you know, I talk about fashion in the book, for instance, and you know, a lot of people think of fashion, I think, as just sort of some sort of frivolous thing that's, you know, meant for skinny 19-year-olds. And, you know, I think fashion is a fantastic way to you know, have a creative outlet. You can, and now is such a great time to, you know, while you're sort of rediscovering yourself and possibly reinventing yourself, you know, time to maybe lose the mom jeans and the old t-shirts that you've been wearing and the, you know, the sort of beige ensembles and, you know, maybe kind of bring some creativity and excitement back into that part of your life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is time to do that, because a lot of times moms or people spend all their money on their kids and they don't buy a lot of clothes for themselves. They'll buy new Nikes for their child going off to college, yet they're still wearing the same sweatshirts from 1980.
Right. Yeah, and you know, and it also doesn't necessarily have to be about, you know, getting yourself that $10,000 couture gown. I mean, it's really about kind of expressing yourself creatively. You can do a lot with what you already have in your wardrobe, and then maybe, you know, just add a few items and, you know, just find, you know, find a way to express who you are. Mm-hmm. And it's just one more way to do that.
Yeah, and you know, I'm just thinking about the book. It was such a joyful read. It was so much fun. And again, to go back
to
those pearls of wisdom, there's a couple that I really like a lot. I want to share those. I'm not going to give them all away because you have to get the book.
Okay,
but one I like in particular is one that says, this is a pearl of wisdom for the child who's left home. Avoid getting drunk, or at least avoid getting totally falling down drunk. And if you do get drunk, avoid entering a tattoo parlor, even if you want to take a closer look at those pretty pictures. Because that's the one thing I don't think a parent wants is their kid to come home for the holiday and have a new tattoo.
Yeah, and which many will, and I think, you know, sometimes you just have to take a deep breath and say, all right, well, they're in college and they're supposed to be experimenting and you know, try to like that new piercing in the nose and just say, well, it's, you know, they're discovering their own form of personal expression. But yes, but don't do it because you're falling down drunk. And, you know, I have sort of a running thing about that, if you notice, with the tips. I start out with that one and I move on to, you know, you really are drinking a lot, aren't you? And, you know, it's like, come on, you know. So I think it's sort of a way to, you know, express what a lot of parents really are thinking and maybe they're too afraid to say to their kids, but it's good to open up these dialogues with them.
Oh, absolutely.
Right. And you know, while we're looking at this from the child standpoint, the one that has now gone off to college, we have a question that's coming in, a listener question that is coming in. This one reads, I am a daughter, 24 years old, who is now out living on my own. My mom and dad have been divorced for the last 2 years, and I'm getting the guilt trip from my mother for not spending more time at home. She still has the big house and, quote, all by herself, and sees no reason I should be insisting on making my own way. I would love to give her your book, but I need to know, will it give a single, and then parentheses, no kid at home mom suggestions on how to make a life for her own self?
Oh, absolutely. She should do that because, yes, I do address single parents and single moms. And, you know, I realize it could, you know, it can be doubly hard when, you know, you're the single mom and your kid is off, you know, for the first time, and it must feel, you know, very much alone because you don't have that spouse to lean on. But, oh, boy, oh, boy. This is a smart girl. And a smart girl to know that she needs to, you know, fail or rise on her own. It is time for her to do that at 24, and she's smart, because a lot of parents, I think, you know, maybe make it too comfortable for a lot of kids, and a lot of kids are like, hey, I got, you know, don't have to pay rent, and I get my laundry done, might as well stick around. And so, you know, good for her, and I do address single parenting in the book, and it is time for your mom to, I mean, it sounds like she's, you know, it sounds like she could have a really wonderful life ahead of her, and she's kind of standing in her own way a little bit.
Now, what would be some suggestions you would give to a single parent? Because I think, you know, I mean, there may be things like, I mean, she may need to go out and meet other people her own age or something like that. If you've lost, you know, either through divorce or whatever, if you've lost your spouse and you have now lost the child who has moved away, I mean, what would be some things, I mean, and is it discussed in the book, things that they can do groups that they can join. I mean, it sounds to me like, you know, whatever it is that you're into, whatever it is that is your hobbies, maybe join a group that does that so that you can meet more people your own age to do your thing.
Well, absolutely. I mean, and I would say just from that listener letter that you just read, just the fact that she said she's all alone in this big house, I would say, well, maybe it's time for mom to, you know, downsize, or, you know, or else if she wants to stay in the house and not, don't keep the house because you want your children to come back. In other words, you know, don't keep it because it's like, well, if I keep it, they'll come back and maybe live with me again. No, I mean, I think if it's the house is too big for you, then time to downsize, or, you know, rent it out while you go travel around, or, you know, there are so many things. And like you said, yes, maybe taking classes at the local college, because it's, in fact, these days there are so many people who are not kids, who are returning to college, so you do have a chance actually to meet people your own age, and also just sort of, you know, local classes, take sailing lessons, you know, take kayaking lessons, join a local hiking group. You know, there are so many, especially with the internet now, you can find a lot of opportunities for that sort of thing.
Oh yeah, a lot of different things, and a lot of single clubs, or if you belong to a local church, there's like, you know, single parents of adult children. I mean, they have groups for everything, or meetup groups for just about any subject under the sun. So you can generally find something in your area. Now we have another. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, go ahead.
Oh, I wanted to hear what you had to say.
Oh, I was just going to say, you know, it sounds as if that that woman's mom really needs to start thinking of herself as an autonomous person again, and not just like a mom who's, you know, bereft. And honestly, she's not doing her child any favors by encouraging her to come home, you know. So I'm hoping that maybe she'll learn a few things from the book.
Yeah, well, also it seems like she did a really good job in raising her daughter, to have her daughter go out and be on herself and know that she could handle it, and she doesn't need mom to have her back anymore, that she could go out and do what she needs to do. And that kind of leaves
Absolutely. Yeah, and you don't want your kids to come home because they feel guilty. You know, that would be the worst reason.
And now on the other side of that, our other listener question says, my son and his girlfriend just moved in together to an apartment which is actually just a few miles from our home. What I thought would be a few degrees of separation has turned out to be just the opposite. He is over here all the time watching our big screen TV, eating more of our food, as we now have the girlfriend to feed all the time as well. And they just walked out back to their place, leaving our house a complete disaster area. I'm about to excommunicate them both. What do you think? Can you provide any suggestions on how to handle the situation diplomatically?
Oh boy, that's a tough one. But I mean, obviously, you know, they're coming over because it's really comfortable, and they've got the big screen TV, and somehow or other they have it in their heads that it's okay to leave a mess over here, and then we'll go back home and sleep. So, you know, I think you can be diplomatic, and you also maybe need to be a little firmer and say, you know, simply sit down with both of them and say, it's so great that you have your own place. We're so excited, you know, for you both, and but you know what? We have to start making some boundaries, because, you know, we've gotten really used to having our own place here, and now we've got these people coming over and, you know, leaving a mess and watching the TV, and, you know, we have to have some separation. And I think if you address them as adults, because honestly, this sort of speaks to the same issue of when your kids move back home, you know, whether you want them there. Some cases, I think you need to look at the reasons why you want them to come move back. But if they do move back, you know, it's sort of, are you making it too comfortable? If you had adult roommates, you would certainly expect certain things from adult roommates, like, you know, they'd have to pick up after themselves, they'd have to maybe chip in for rent or, you know, whatever, and do their part of grocery shopping and chores. So I think you should expect no less from your adult children. And in this case, you know, what if you had a friend who just kind of came over when they wanted to and plop themselves on the couch and watch your television and then left a mess? I mean, this would be a friend who would not be a friend for very long. Mm-hmm. You would say, are you kidding me? Joe is coming over to watch our TV again? Does he not have a clue? I mean, this is not behavior you would accept from a friend, so I think you certainly shouldn't accept it from your kids.
Right, and I think it's all about setting appropriate boundaries with them, too. I mean, they have their home, you have yours. You'd appreciate a phone call before they just stop by, because what if, you know, mom and dad are busy on the couch when you walk in? That would be very awkward. So,
yeah, exactly. And it is your home. And I think, you know, it's not like you suddenly have to be kind of formal and, you know, obviously they're your kids. They're not your, you know, your friends. And so the things are, you know, but there really should be some boundaries. And if they haven't got a clue, you really have to clue them in.
Right, yeah, and I think, too, you brought up a great point when you mentioned about the fact of, you know, if there were any adults that were living there with you, part-time or not, you know, there would be certain things that would be expected of them. And I know it was something my father did to me, something that I did for my daughter, which is, you know, if you come back home, and, you know, as an adult, obviously you want to be able to make your decisions as an adult. You know, and so if you're going to live as an adult and you're going to come and go as you please, then you're going to also, with that comes a certain amount of responsibility that you take with it, which is, again, you pay part of the rent or you pick up part of the groceries or, you know, you pay your cable bill, whatever it is. You know, I think if we give them something like that, it makes them think about the fact, well, you know, if I'm going to spend this money here, I can just as soon spend it in my own place. And I think
you're right, without having mom and dad, you know, be laying down these rules. It's time to maybe make your place a little less comfortable for your kids.
Well, yeah, and
you know.
Yeah, and at the same time, they're not going to give up those rights. You know, so in other words, if they go, well, but wait a minute, I don't want to do all that. Well, but you understand that when you were a kid, you know, it was because we were making certain decisions for you in regards to what time you were coming home and things like that. You know, but now as an adult, along with those same rights come certain responsibilities so that they know it's a package deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and I think that kind of goes along when kids come home from vacation or they're away from college and they come back for a holiday, especially an extended one, say for the summer, and they act like it's a flop house as opposed to they're coming back, they're staying here, they might need to clean up the room or sweep up the sand they come, you know, they track in from the beach, you know, just taking care of themselves like they would at anybody else's home that they might be visiting. Somehow those rules get lost. So do you still treat those children with like high school rules or like there's curfews, or do you have a lot more flexibility and have higher expectations and then a consequence that they don't follow those expectations? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's a great question because, I mean, yeah, do the same rules apply as when they were in high school? Again, as you just mentioned, I think, you know, giving them more responsibility and, you know, expecting more of them is you know, it means there's more responsibility on their part. But I think, yeah, I mean, do you let them have their girlfriend or boyfriend spend the night? You know, I think some of these are really personal calls. I mean, do they get to have a glass of wine with dinner? Do they still get to lounge around and, you know, watch TV while you pick up after them? You know, you have to draw your own personal boundaries and see what you're comfortable with. But I do think that, yes, with greater freedom comes greater responsibility, and they need to, you know, maybe pull their weight a little more and be aware that they are, yes, they're still your child. But and it's not you that you want to say you're a visitor here now, but at the same time, you know, this is our house, and how would you be behaving, you know, if you were a guest in anyone's house? Mm-hmm. And I think you need to demand that same kind of respect that you would if you had any visitor.
Mm-hmm. Now, and let's talk a little bit about what about after college. Now, unfortunately, the economy is such that we have a lot of people that are going off to college, getting a degree, and finding out that there's no job that fits for that. What about after college with so many kids now coming home to stay? You know, and, you know, at that point, I mean, how do we set that up as parents to where, you know, they've come home, they're not leaving. And actually we did another show called Failure to Launch, you know, where it was just that there's so many of them are coming home and not having a place to go or a job to go to. How can we help them in that area, but yet at the same time, not have them, you know, live with you until they're 40?
Yeah, I mean, because of course we want to support them and help them, you know, get on their feet if they need that extra boost. I mean, on the other hand, I think there are a lot of kids who have sort of a sense of entitlement that, well, if they can't have that, you know, penthouse apartment and they can't afford it, then, you know, they're coming home because it's just too expensive out there. I mean, we used to have, I don't know what, 5 or 6 roommates sharing a 3-bedroom apartment in Aquino. When I was in college, I had a garage that I was, you know, renting out in the back of someone's house. You know, we had a thing called roommates, and we all chipped in for rent, and it wasn't always luxurious, but it was a way to sort of be on our own. So I think, you know, you want to get your help your kids get on their feet, but if they're home and it's, you know, as we were just discussing, it's really comfortable and their laundry's being done for them, you know, yes, sometimes you really want your kids to come back, and you have to look at your own reasons for that and, you know, and why you want them back. But if you're having adult roommates and it's, you know, every day is pajama day, I think, is that okay with you? I mean, I don't know. I don't think it would be okay with me. I think you have to really try to help your kid get on their feet, but encourage them to be on their own. And there are a lot of alternatives to living at home, even with a bad economy, because, you know, as I said, you can rough it a little bit.
Right.
And I think they don't all need to have a brand new car and, you know, a fancy apartment right off the bat. That's the kind of thing that you sort of work towards, you know?
Right, something that you earn. And I think that was the biggest thing that I see is this huge sense of entitlement. They don't want to live in that beat-up little apartment or studio up above a garage in the back of, you know, 20 miles from school or whatever, because that's all they could afford. They want to be in a nice, comfortable home with air conditioning and, you know, and heat and,
yeah,
and everything else.
And a full refrigerator.
Oh, yeah. The other
and a full But I think in a lot of cases, the parents are encouraging this because these parents who have, you know, as I was talking about before, you know, they've micromanaged every minute of their kids' lives. They've sent them to all the enrichment classes. They've supervised everything and taken them here and there to their little league and their violin lessons, and now suddenly it's like, well, I don't want them living in this shabby apartment. We'll just invest in a nice, you know, townhouse, and then they can live in that for, you know, rent free. And you know, I don't think you're doing your kids any favors, even though you want the best for them. Of course, we all want the best for our kids, but I want my kids to learn that they need to, you know, earn the best and not just sort of have it handed to them. Because I think ultimately they know they didn't earn it, and I don't think it's really going to be good for them in the long run.
Right. And then would you agree that, you know, the concept of getting a job, you know, again, this coming back after college is, you know, I think they need to be going to a certain amount of interviews. They need to be getting their resume out there. They need to be accepting the fact that they may not be able to get that ideal job that they wanted to get coming right out of college. I mean, would you agree that, I mean, there should be some sort of structure that you need to be getting it out there or doing X amount of interviews a week to show that they're really making an effort?
Oh, absolutely. If they're living at home, I would hope that they would, you know, they would be doing that on their own. And if they're not, it's time to sit down and have a good talk with them. And you could also give them my third book called Raised by Wolves, which HarperCollins published, which was sort of meant for that situation. It's meant for kind of the 20-somethings or in some cases 30-somethings who, you know, still don't know how to make their own bed or look for a job or, you know, cook an egg. And it's, I've really addressed that in that book. Mm-hmm. And in this book as well a little bit. But, you know, yeah, it's time for, I think the entitlement issue is really interesting. And I think a lot of it has to do with parents who've just been, you know, been doing so much for their kids and that kids sort of grow up, it's like, well, I got a trophy just for showing up at Little League. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they just think that life is going to be that way.
Yeah, and I just keep thinking the best thing you do for a kid when they move out on their own is get them a Betty Crocker cookbook, just a basic cookbook. Here you go. You can feed yourself now. You don't have to come home to home cooking. You know, just,
yeah.
And not worry about where they live. So they grew up maybe in an upper middle class area, suburb or whatever. It doesn't mean that they can't live in an urban area in maybe a rundown area, but then they work for it, they appreciate it, they earn the money to move themselves up and out. And I think that makes a big difference and helps build a lot of their character and also their self-efficacy of knowing that they could do this on their own. They could take care of themselves.
I really agree. And also the whole idea of, you know, getting a crappy job. I have a whole chapter in my Raised by Wolves book about that. You know, just get a crappy job. It's really, everyone should have one crappy job at least in their lives. Because, you know, it builds character. You understand what, you know, having a bad boss is like. You know, you really, everyone, it really is a good life experience, you know, to have a couple of bad jobs. You know, jobs you hate or, you know, crazy bosses. It's all a good thing.
Yeah, and more of the good things are your pearl wisdoms. There was another one that you had in your book that I absolutely love because I think it's so true, especially in today's of technology, is that to work on your penmanship. And what you write here is work on your penmanship. I know it seems like a useless thing to you right now, but it's becoming a lost art. So practice your handwriting every now and then. Why? Because it's always a good thing to know how to write a legible love letter, if not for yourself, for others. And it's a skill, and someday you just might want to write a real letter to somebody, just because you can. Keep some nice notepaper around, some envelopes, and get a sheet of stamps, just in case. I think that is wonderful advice.
Well, thank you. I have, you know, there's sort of an Emily Post streak that runs through me, because I feel like, you know, Emily Post, in a way, is sort of like my personal Bible, because a lot of people kind of think Emily Post is that person, of course, who wrote this wonderful etiquette book.
Yes.
I think the first one was written in the 1920s, and of course it's been updated, but I really like the early 1930s versions, because people kind of think that it's all sort of about, you know, which fork you're supposed to use and that type of etiquette. And in fact, it's really about how you treat people in the world. And I think those little lost arts like penmanship and learning how to write a letter and those things are all a part of that. It's just like, wow, you know, how meaningful is it to get a handwritten letter these days?
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, for your boys, you can say, well, you know, the ladies really like that sort of thing. You can write a love letter, a real love letter, not an email. So, you know, it's those little lost arts are, it's so easy, and yet it's just been kind of fallen by the wayside. So.
Yeah, and it's like the lost art of not having a dictionary or thesaurus in the house and to look up the beautiful words that we have. I mean, everything are texts now and acronyms and, you know, you get these things. It's like, what does that mean? And it's not as personal as actually writing out an entire word and taking the time, because so many are so eloquent.
It's true. And, you know, I probably shouldn't be, you know, sharing this story, but I'm going to anyway. My oldest son was dating a girl for a short time that he, you know, met in college, and she came and met me once, and she actually said LOL out loud to me, and I had said something that was sort of funny, I guess, and she said, you know, oh, LOL, and I just was so floored. And I just thought, you know, I'm sorry, this one's not going to last. you can't say LOL out loud. I'm sorry. Bad enough in print, but
yeah.
So, I'm a little hard.
Well, I just know when LOL, the first time I saw that, I thought that meant lots of love. I didn't know that meant
out
loud.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it just
went
back to the X's and O's we used to put at the end of the letters for kisses and hugs.
Yes, I know. I've heard that story before. A lot of parents thought that when that word first started being used, or that, yeah. Yeah, as a little side note, my husband and I sometimes like to read those Yelp restaurant reviews, you know, and because sometimes they're just so bizarre. And our favorite recent one was, my husband read to me the other day, the review said something like, I have one word for this restaurant, OMG.
It's like, oh my goodness, or what does it mean?
Yeah, OMG is the thing that kids write that is like, oh my god. And they just, for, you know, you just say OMG now. So
yeah,
anyway, that's our new favorite one, is I have one word, OMG.
Well, I think that's more than one word, but you wrote many words in your book, Fun Without Dick and Jane, Your Guide to a Delightfully Empty Nest. And Christy Miller, it was so wonderful for you to join us today. We are going to have to wrap it up right now, but where can people find your book if they're interested in purchasing it?
Well, if there are any bookstores left, you can find it, you can find my book there. I think there's still Barnes & Noble. And, of course, please support your independent bookstore. Mm-hmm. And if your local independent bookstore doesn't have my book, tell them that they should get it. And, of course, it's available on Amazon and through Chronicle Books.
Okay. And do you have a website that people could go to?
I do. It's just ChristieMellor.com. That's ChristieMellor.com.
Well, that's wonderful. And if you miss that because you're driving or what have you, just check our AnswersForTheFamilyblog.com, and we'll have all of Christy's information on that too, so you can connect with her, gather more information. And I do highly recommend this book for any parents that have teenagers or those that are already recently out of the nest. It'll definitely, you'll get a kick out of it and get lots of pearls of wisdom for both you and your child.
And yes, Christy, thank you so much. I'm reading it now, and as I said, I've got two more at home.
Oh, well, good. Start early. That's what I say. And thank you so much for having me.
Well, thank you very much, and please join us next week for more Answers for the Family.
You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio.